Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jason Flom.
And you're Maggie Freeling.
Hey, Jason.
Every day we learn about another person who shouldn't be in prison.
58 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. So glad you're home.
If you want to be part of this work, listen to Wrongful Conviction,
the podcast where we hand the mic to innocent people to hear their stories.
How do you send someone innocent to prison?
Listen to new episodes of Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling and Jason Flom on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Mark Shaw with us. Mark, we were talking about how Dorothy's body was kind of moved around. That's kind of weird, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's amazing to me with some of these crime scenes what happens. We now know, and I think we have proven in The Reporter Who Knew Too Much and then Denial of Justice, that you know, when the police finally came to Dorothy Kilgallen's townhouse, she'd already been dead for several hours. And you wonder then what happened during that time. We now know that there was the FBI came, kind of swarmed the apartment, took out of all of her documents, investigative files, everything like that. And then the medical examiner, a junior medical examiner, not the main one, came and just took a look at a empty Seconal bottle and decided that she'd overdosed, not checking to see that she had actually died in the bathroom and then was taken into the bedroom. That's been proven. So, you know, you get these situations where, unfortunately, the crime scene is not as it was when she died, and that's what happened with Dorothy. And really what occurred there, I finally interviewed Dr. Michael Bodden, who I think you've had on your program before, about a month or two ago for the new book, and I wanted to ask him why they came up with the solution, the verdict, that it was a combination of an overdose of barbiturates and alcohol, circumstances undetermined. And I asked him why in the world then they went ahead and told the media that she died of an accidental death, and he admitted, he said, "It looks to me like," and his name, by the way, was on the autopsy report, basically that they didn't know what happened to Dorothy, and yet they said it was an accidental death. And the main detective on the case, I found a quote from him where he said if he would have known that it wasn't that it wasn't an accidental death, he would have investigated. So unfortunately, you know, with these kinds of cases, everything gets all mixed up, and then you really don't have the truth. You're a man of the truth, George, and we can't really find at times the truth about these kinds of cases.
And what a story it was. And didn't the FBI raid the house, too, and grab some documents?
They did. And you know, these are true crime murder mysteries. All of my books are about Dorothy Kilgallen. The new one is as well, Collateral Damage. But in this situation, you have a true crime murder mystery because I think I told you the last time I was on the show that I had found a reliable source in Las Vegas who told me exactly how Dorothy was set up for the kill. There was a boyfriend of hers, the main suspect, Ron Pataki, who learned about what Dorothy was going to put in the book for Random House. He told the wrong people what happened, this guy told me, this source. And therefore, they had to be able to eliminate her because they couldn't write that. She couldn't write that book for Random House. And so, you know, in that situation, you look at motive, and then you know, we now know with an eyewitness that J. Edgar Hoover sent his agents into her townhouse to destroy that file of hers, that thick file of hers on the investigation of JFK. So he becomes even more of a suspect than he was before, as well as Carlos Marcello, the New Orleans Don, who had another motive to have eliminated Dorothy.
Is Pataki still alive?
Yes, he is. And this has been an exciting time since I was on the show last. Some successes and some failures. It's amazing. You know, I've been able to show, the fact that we're still trying to hide the truth with the Ruby trial transcripts, for instance, which are the most important documents about the assassination and clearly show a plot to kill the president. The sixth-floor museum at Daley Plaza in Dallas still distorts history with only information about the Oswald alone theory. And then my attempts to get Dorothy an investigation, George, it's amazing to me. Vance Jr., the New York District Attorney, as you know, agreed to do a thorough investigation, and then he pulled the plug after 8 months. I went to New York, I think I told you, in February, and met Commissioner Dermot Shea of the New York Police Department. I shook his hand. There's a photograph of him and me on my website, markshawbooks.com. He gave me the name of a detective in his department and the detective's business card, and said that I could communicate with that detective. I got back to my home in California. I sent emails to that detective. None were answered. I left a phone message for him. None were answered. And finally, I realized that what Shea had done was in many ways shameless. He had really lied to me in my face. I don't think he ever intended for the detective to get back to me. And so that really has disappointed me. There's a letter I wrote to Shea that's on my website, markshawbooks.com, complaining about what happened. I filed a Freedom of Information request trying to get them to go forward because of all the new evidence I have about Ron Pataki. It's overwhelming, George, that he was complicit in Dorothy's death. And besides using a fellow officer as kind of a shield here, which I believe is really derogatory with any officer who's under the command of the commissioner of the New York Police Department, a killer is going to go free here unless they investigate. And that this case qualifies on every level as a cold case squad investigation, and yet I can't get them to go after this. I assume your audience, and maybe you as well, are thinking, why is everybody scared of Dorothy Kilgallen's case that happened in 1965?
Right. What did she know?
Exactly. And there's something there, and of course, we both know when the government is investigating the government, it's an uphill battle. But this little pint-sized woman scares the hell out of people with regard to what she knew about the assassination. Nobody wants to jump into that case at all, but I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to expose what Shea did, and I'm going to try to get an independent investigation.
What do you think Jack Ruby told her in his prison cell?
Well, this is fascinating because, I just got a chill, George, because again today, I think Ruby, what do we know Dorothy did? She lost her file, so we don't have the notes. In the new book, by the way, I have a picture of her in Daley Plaza. It shows she was right there and right at the trial. Where did she go right after the Ruby trial? She didn't go to Washington, D.C. and look into President Johnson or the CIA or anybody. She didn't, stay in Dallas. She went to New Orleans. And as we both know, I've looked at the assassination differently than anybody ever has. Why Bobby Kennedy was not killed instead of why JFK was. And when you have that perspective, which is the same one that Dorothy had, I believe, you realize that Marcello, who was pursued by Bobby Kennedy right after Kennedy became Attorney General and had deported him and charged him with racketeering,
and then he got back in again.
Yeah. Bobby killed JFK, so Bobby would be powerless. So that's where Dorothy went. And she successfully had one trip there. Remember, that was a very mysterious trip with her hairdresser saying in the videotapes that I have on the DorothyKilgallenStory.org that when they got there, she called him and said, go back to New York. Don't tell anybody you were here. She goes back to New York, and unfortunately she starts saying, if the wrong people knew what I know about the JFK assassination, it could cost me my life. I'm afraid for my life and my family. I've bought a gun, and she was dead shortly thereafter. So Where did Ruby, what did Ruby say? Well, today, this gentleman who got in touch with me from Florida told me that he interviewed two of the children of Dorothy, Richard Jr. and Carrie, and while they were talking, they said to him that Jack Ruby had told Dorothy that if he could just get in front of an independent jury, he would tell the truth about what happened.
Wow.
And I think when Dorothy learned that, that's what extended her investigation and into New Orleans.
I mean,
that's where we are right now.
Didn't Ruby know Carlos Marcello?
Oh, it's just amazing.
And
you know,
Santo Traficante, he knew them both. He was running strip clubs for them, wasn't he?
And if this all goes back to my first book about this assassination, about Melvin Belli, the San Francisco lawyer that I knew and practiced law with in the 80s, and who was Jack Ruby's lawyer, and he was all mobbed up with Mickey Cohen and all of that, brought in to silence Jack Ruby, and of course then Ruby we connect easily with Marcello through his underlings, because Marcello's empire, George, extended to Dallas. And you know, there's these little things that Dorothy picked up, and it's amazing to me that people missed them back then. The very first visitor to Jack Ruby in jail was a guy named Campisi, and Joe Savello, Joe Campisi and Joe Savello, but Campisi was the first one. Well, who was he working for in Dallas? Carlos Marcello.
Yeah, exactly.
And Traficante.
Did the name Jimmy Hoffa come up much, Mark, in your work?
What's that?
Jimmy Hoffa's name, did it come up much?
Yeah, it did. And it comes through an interesting book by Frank Regano, who was a lawyer in Florida. You may have heard his name, but it's called Mob Lawyer. I've suggested people read it, because imagine this as your three main clients: James Hoffa, Santo Traficante, and Carlos Marcello. And I interviewed Regano's widow, Nancy, and she was able to tell me about the connections between Hoffa, the gangsters, Ruby, Oswald being... I now have an eyewitness who saw Oswald in Marcello's restaurant in New Orleans. You know, you can easily connect all of those people, and I'll tell you what the common denominator is: common sense. That's what Dorothy was really good at, you know, at the Sam Shepard case or the Lindbergh baby kidnapping case. I mean, she was a better trial lawyer than most trial lawyers.
Right.
She really was.
Well, and in this case, too, with the situation with Hoffa, he hated Bobby Kennedy.
Oh, my
hated
God.
Him with a passion.
Well, I would think you would when the Attorney General of the United States tries to strangle you. I mean, when Hoffa tries to strangle the Attorney General of the United States, yeah, I think that's hatred. And so, you know, they all had a motive. You know, Bobby Kennedy is a big part of the new book, Collateral Damage. I'm going to connect the deaths of Dorothy Kilgallen, Marilyn Monroe, and JFK, and the common denominator there is Bobby Kennedy. You know, it's amazing. You know, you have three deaths there, George, within 40 months.
Yeah.
Marilyn dies in August of 62, JFK November 63, and Dorothy November 65. 40 months, all three of these individuals died, and I've been amazed now at the similarities I've found in each of their lives and their professional and private lives, and then connecting them together with regard to their tragic deaths.
And then eventually Bobby goes.
And then Bobby is killed in 68, and you know, again, common sense. Look, what happened when Bobby Kennedy, when Jack Kennedy died? Bobby Kennedy was powerless. He broke up that huge group of federal investigators, never went after those mobsters again.
That's right. LBJ basically stymied him, didn't he?
He resigned in September of 1967. Then he's going to run for president. Now, many people asked me to write this book about Marilyn with Dorothy and JFK, but they also want me to write about Bobby Kennedy's death, because use a little common sense. Is there any connection between Sirhan Sirhan and the same gangsters? You know, I've never looked into that, but somebody certainly should, because common sense would say what? These gangsters are now free of Bobby Kennedy, and then Kennedy runs for president. What would be the first thing he would do when he entered the White House? He would go back and investigate those guys for their participation in his brother's death.
Yep.
And remember what Bobby said, and this has been you know, proven by many other people besides me. What did he say when he heard that, JFK had been killed? Well, I thought it would be me.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, mm-hmm. he was right. He knew it was supposed to be him. That's what the prosecutor of Jack Ruby, Bill Alexander, told me. He expected Bobby Kennedy to be killed.
See, they were concerned if Bobby got killed, JFK would assign some other prosecutors to go after the same people.
Absolutely. It doesn't take too much to think that Bobby Kennedy, they couldn't let him become president of the United States. It just wasn't going to happen. You know, Nick Pileggi, you may have interviewed him, an incredible writer, who wrote Wise Guys and those films. He used to tell me, you know, you can't mess around with those mafioso, the Sicilians. It's all about revenge. And I think I may have told you this story before, a personal story. When I was with Good Morning America and covering trials and things, they sent me to Philadelphia to interview the lawyer for Anthony Russo, or whatever his name was, Angelo Bruno, the main gangster in Philadelphia, and they were trying to get into Atlantic City. So I went to Philadelphia. I sat down with this lawyer, and he started telling me things about, the mafia boss that I didn't think he should be telling me. They played that the next day, the tape of it, on Good Morning America, Sandy Hill and David Hartman. Maybe your listeners will remember.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, look, will he talk to you again? Because it was a big hit. And I said, well, I'll find out. I called his office. This secretary answered. She was kind of whimpering. And I said, are you okay? And she said, well, I guess you don't know Mr. Shaw. He was sitting in his car this morning, and it blew up.
That was during that time all those car bombings were happening.
You can't mess around with those guys.
No.
And Joe Kennedy, telling JFK to appoint Bobby Kennedy, double-crossing them. You know, it all comes around in life, George. And, you know, it's really unfortunate that Jack Kennedy died. He should have never died. That's part of the collateral damage here, as Marilyn is and as Dorothy Kilgallen is. In the new book.
Did I ever tell you that I may have been one of the last newsmen to talk to Jimmy Hoffa?
No.
May 1975 in Detroit. I invite him to a TV show I was producing. He came in. He did it. I walked him to his car. We chatted a little bit. We shook hands and off he went. My theory is twofold, Mark, with Jimmy Hoffa. I think, one, he wanted to regain the Teamster presidency, and the mob was so involved with Frank Fitzsimmons getting better deals than they were getting with Jimmy. They didn't want Jimmy back. But I also think part of me thinks that Jimmy was going to rat on them over the JFK assassination.
Oh, and I've never thought of that.
And so they bump him off because they were afraid he was going to talk.
Interesting. Because, well, look, you know, he and Marcello and Trafficante were, you know, three birds together, and Frank Regano connects them completely. So that makes sense. I think I'll try to look into that. Is it all right if I...
Yeah, that could be another book for you.
Use your research here.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And, you know, mine was firsthand experience. But that I always had that feeling when I was with Hoffa that it wasn't just the Teamster presidency he was after. There was something else.
What was your impression of him, George?
He was a tough, strong unionist. And there were times when companies would abuse the American working man or woman,
right. And
they needed a tough president. And in those days, those unions used muscle, as the companies did, to fight back. And he was there at the right time. Ironically, his son is the president of the Teamsters Union now.
I think that's right, isn't it?
Yep, sure is. But I always had that feeling.
That's a slice of history that you... you know, we're able to meet and talk with him and all of that. And this all is all about history. People probably wonder, why are we talking about the assassination that happened years and years and years ago? Well, it's about history. And I'm about history, and I'm about abolishing distortions of history just like you are. We're both looking for the truth.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern. And go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, I'm sure you know why we're here. I was like, what in the world is going on?
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jason Flom.
And you're Maggie Freeling.
Hey, Jason.
Every day we learn about another person who shouldn't be in prison.
58 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. So glad you're home.
If you want to be part of this work, listen to Wrongful Conviction,
the podcast where we hand the mic to innocent people to hear their stories.
How do you send someone innocent to prison?
Listen to new episodes of Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling and Jason Flom on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.